with Red Dead Redemption 2, this year's hottest Christmas present, at least for me, nudge nudge hint hint mother. Reading fans witnessed One Man's red and white redemption on Saturday as Mark McNulty bounced back from a midweek penalty miss to open the scoring versus Stoke. However, it wasn't until the 94th minute that a point was confirmed against the Potters. Welcome to episode 177 of the Tireless End Podcast with your host Mark Mayo. We'll be talking about the 1-0 defeat to Leeds on Tuesday night, followed by a 2-2 draw back at the Mad Stad on the weekend. And doing that with me this weekend is Matt Lawrence, who operates under the name Panners and Nutmegs on thetirelessden.com. How's it going, mate?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good, thank you very much. Yeah, feeling a little bit ropey after one or two glasses of red wine too many after Mo Barrow's last-minute equaliser. So I thought it was only right to celebrate that on Saturday evening.
Yeah, and it's at the very least you're not celebrating or commiserating, should I say, a 2-1 Stoke win. So occasionally, as a Reading fan, you get moments of good news and good fortune. So I suppose it's only right to make the most of them.
Got to clutch on to what we can celebrate this season so far, haven't we?
Absolutely. And just a quick word before we get on with the recap then. Thank you, as per always, for the Patreon subscribers. I know as the finances probably get a little bit tight around this sort of time of year, and you know, the tirelessden.com always trying to put as much content as possible. I know that Matt's had his tactics piece up in the week, a lot of good analysis and that, which hopefully we'll be bringing up in the show today. And those are sort of things we try to bring you in with the Patreon. That's always our virtual tip jar, which we try and use for the good of the show, as for us as hosts, as for you, and for you as listeners as well. And speaking of which, there will be a brief hiatus of this show in the next couple of weeks. We won't be back until around about the 20th of December. That Thursday the 20th is the date we're set for the Christmas podcast in the centre of Reading. So we'll put the details of that up on social media for any listeners and whatnot who want to come down. Or that's an open door event somewhere in central Reading. We'll let you know to record that. Probably won't be a show before then, as it's a bit of a busy period for myself and for the others as well. So without further ado, let's get on with the recap.
The Tirelessden End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetirelessden.com.
Right, so first, Leeds. And Matt, I've got okay performance, penalty miss, pretty typical, is my way of summing this one up. This was a pretty classic Reading performance in a large sense. Played pretty well. Didn't trouble them too much. Get our big chance, you know, in front of the TV cameras. It's our chance to show the world that we're actually not that bad a team. And all we've shown is that Leeds are actually probably in that sort of vein of form and vein of good fortune where they actually are probably going to push for promotion.
Yeah, real shame that we weren't able to capitalise on the opportunity of taking away a point from promotion chasers Leeds after what I thought was actually a very good, solid away performance. Compare that to the fragility we've seen of some of our recent performances at home. We've been conceding two against Ipswich at home, two against Stoke this weekend, two against Bristol City as well. So to go away to Leeds, keep it very tight, and then only go down 1-0, have the opportunity to get a penalty in the last minute, take home a point back to Berkshire. It's really frustrating not to be able to take that point back, because that would definitely have been a really good point. But there were definitely positives to take out of the game. I think Loader starting, getting his first championship start, not looking out of his depth at all. He was getting into nice pockets of space in the number 10 area, linking play up. He definitely didn't look out of his depth. I think there's definitely potential for him to get some more game time this season at this level. He's definitely got something to offer to the squad, which is positive. Ilori as well, coming back into the side on Tuesday night. He looked very assured at the back as well, because he's been out for four games. I thought he came in, did very well, put in a very assured performance there. But the shining man in that performance, I'm sure for most other Reading fans, was Rinomota. Academy product, he's come in, he was big, strong, physical, really broke up the play in the midfield, was getting across the pitch incredibly well, driving the team forward with his dribbling. I know a lot of fans have mentioned that there's kind of an air of Danny Williams around his performance as well. Kind of all the good things that Danny Williams used to bring with driving the team forward, being able to carry the ball 30 yards. He showcased that on Tuesday night and again on Saturday as well against Stoke by setting up McNulty's first goal. But yeah, back to Tuesday. Ultimately, we got undone by Leeds' quality at the end of the day. Barry Douglas has been a real positive for them in terms of chance creation. He's obviously gone up last season with Wolves and then come back down to the Championship with Leeds. So he's one of those players that I look at and I think, why are you not playing for a Premier League side? So Leeds have got a really good player there. And it was ultimately him that contributed to the first goal. But the main thing, and like you mentioned, I wrote a piece on, was how Paul Clement got slightly tactically outdone by Bielsa and how he introduced Samuel Saiss into the game and just how he managed to overrun Reading's midfield with that slight change.
It's interesting when you talk about the sort of overrunning of the midfield, because we started in a sort of convoluted kind of diamondy sort of thing. We had Swift and Kelly played against Leeds, and then we kept in Swift for the Stoke game, and it's kind of middling in both games. He was the first man subbed off, and Swift, the thing I noted about him is that when he plays well, so does the team. That's just very rare. So, you know, as you pointed out, the bright spark that we had against Leeds was Danny Loader and Rinam Hotta. I think in terms of the Stoke game, Loader couldn't quite bring it through, could he? For me, he just couldn't quite get into the game. Perhaps Stoke were just a little bit more physical. Certainly the two Stoke centre-backs were Shawcross and Martins Indy. I think it would take about five Danny Loaders to make up the combined weight of those two players. So
they're big lads, aren't they?
Exactly.
They are big lads.
They're going to rely on that. They're going to bully you when given the chance, and Loader perhaps doesn't have the experience to stop that. So while he did kind of fade against Stoke, as you mentioned, Rinam Hotta, that Danny Williams comparison is almost uncanny. And in fact, the fact that Rinam Hotta is so comfortable in possession and can pass the ball, that was something that Danny Williams couldn't really do.
He looks more dynamic in terms of his passing. It looks like he's got a better range of passing than Danny Williams as well. So that's definitely a promising thing. He's looking to get on the ball all the time. He's looking to be positive on the ball, which is the main thing for me. I'm sure for a lot of other fans as well. We're not seeing as much sideways passing, almost passing for the sake of it. He's looking to commit people, looking to ask questions of their defenders and trying to break the lines with his passing and his dribbling. So having someone in the side that's going to try and make those sort of things happen is definitely a positive to have in this side, which at times last season looked very turgid.
Yeah, so one of the things, let's pick about why we managed to sort of get back into the game against Stoke, because it was kind of a weird one, wasn't it? In that we started kind of well, then faded, but scored anyway. And then Stoke in that second half, it was so typical. Talk about typical things that Reading do. We really do follow patterns and themes, don't we? It's astounding that conceded 2 minutes and 5 seconds into the second half, then we really struggled. But the thing that changed the game in Paul Clement's favour, or was it in Paul Clement's favour? This is what I want to ask, because Mo Barrow, Sam Baldock and Yaku Mate came off the bench. Arguably our three most talented attackers. They came off the bench, and certainly I thought Mate did really well and assisted the goal, and I wonder why he didn't start. But do you think that this is a good thing for Clement, that he can bring these players off the bench, or do you think that actually kind of demonstrates that it's a bit of a roulette wheel in terms of how he's picking his 11 at the moment as to why they didn't start?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think it's definitely positive that he's got the options on the bench to come off, like Mate, Baldock and Barrow. You've got a winger there in Barrow that scored 10 goals last season. Mate's been in the form of his life. Baldock's an experienced striker at this level as well and has got promoted before. But then Paul Clement was probably justified in his decision to start McNulty because he did get the goal. Personally, I would quite like to have seen Yaku Mate start. I think he's in fantastic form at the moment. Like you mentioned, Martins Indy and Shawcross are very large, very, very large men. And they did get into that Danny Loader a little bit more as well. He wasn't able to get on the ball in those kind of number 10 pockets. I thought their midfield kind of screened that area very well. They weren't allowing those sort of passes through. So having the option of Yakimete, where you can go slightly longer, and he's willing to turn defenders, get in behind defenders, you can relieve a little bit of pressure. Just asking the question of defenders in behind them as well, getting them turned, is an option as well. And I do think Yakimete probably should have started in place of Danny Loda, personally, with maybe Loda coming off the bench if Mete hadn't been more effective. But the fact that Mete did come off the bench, made an impact along with Barrow, is definitely a positive as well. I would like to see, it feels like we say it every week, I would just like to see some level of consistency within the team selections and the lineups.
Yeah, I must agree. And it did feel like Paul Clement probably didn't have the best of days running into this game, with Liam Kelly apparently was taken in overnight. Liam Moore had picked up an injury in training. O'Shea had injured himself in the warm-up as well. Mate, there was talk of him having a bit of an ankle injury problem, but again, do you play your best player if he's 80% and hope to get an hour out of him, or do you hope to save him for the last 20 minutes? It's you know, a bit of a debate. Last point for the recap then is what I want to think about Mate is whether you think he is basically going to come in for McNulty or for Loda at this point, because McNulty, I didn't feel like, goal aside, which is a well-taken goal, I didn't feel like he made any real discernible impact on the game. And yet, especially with strikers, when they're in form and they're getting goals, more specifically for McNulty, when they're getting goals, you do feel like you have to play them. But what does it say necessarily to Loda if you say, well, you've had a couple of games, you did well in one of them, that's not enough? Feels a bit harsh, doesn't it?
It is a bit harsh, but perhaps that is the cold, harsh reality of football management. You have to make, you're paid to make those decisions. I think he's brought Danny Loda in and done well. He, like you say, he did have, I felt, probably more of an impact on the game overall than McNulty, particularly in the build-up phase. I didn't really think McNulty got into the game that much. But McNulty, like I said, it's a poacher's goal, and that's what you want your number nine to be doing at the end of the day, is finishing things off in the six-yard box, and that's what he's done. He's contributed to getting a point for the team. But it's kind of, do we look at having a striker with more kind of all-round associative play, being able to drop in between the lines? Loda's, we've seen him float out wide as well. And yeah, whether we go with Mete through the middle, I don't know who your preference would be in terms of who you'd have as number nine.
I think in the long term, the idea of Loda and Mete as a kind of duo, with you, as you say, that Loda dropping off and Mete being that sort of instinctive number nine, does sound kind of nice, but it's perhaps a little bit premature for that. And I'd feel if you're going to drop McNulty, that does, it almost says, you know, obviously he could have played a lot better against Stoke, but it does really say, like, even though you scored, it's not enough. And that's a really hard thing to say to a striker, especially after his penalty miss as well. So, I mean, I was going to say, I think Paul Clement will do X. What Paul Clement does is absolutely anybody's guess for when we play Sheffield United on Saturday. He could play Sonny Aluko up front with John O'Shea for all he knows.
It's going to be a pick a name out of the hat
Let's avoid the predictions, and we'll round up the recap then with what Paul Clement said after the game. He said that, I'm pleased with the spirit, personality, determination and courage in the last two games. We've played two really good sides this week, both tipped to go up, and we've shown that we can compete at that level. Now we've got to show that we can do that on a consistent basis. We have to do it consistently throughout games as well, because I thought we were good in the first half, not so good at the start of the second half, and then finished strong. The Stoke were tipped to go up, yes, but the idea of them being a really good side, not so much. The word shambles was said under the breath of one of the Stoke fans as they walked past me out of the Mad Stad on a Saturday, so they're certainly not quite where they want to be. So, yeah, Sheffield United game is next up on Saturday. That's on TV, a 5:30 kickoff. So we'll talk about that towards the end of the show. For now, we'll move on to News Bites.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So as we record this on Sunday night, there's been some action for the other Reading FC teams under the books, and that is a 1-0 defeat for Reading women against Chelsea away from home. That was a battle of fourth versus fifth in the Women's Super League, tight defeat but follows up from a 2-1 win against Everton the week before. That came courtesy of a Brooke Chaplin brace. So not doing too badly at all, the women's team. This is a bit of a hope, you know, going away to Chelsea. It's not the sort of game that you can expect to win at this level. And they're next in action against Liverpool at home on December 9th. Under-23s, they beat Fulham 3-0 last time out last month. They next play West Brom away on the 8th. They're top of Premier League 2 by 3 points, so on a really good run. Contrastingly, the under-18s not so much. They're 9th in the Premier League. They've lost 8 games in a row in all competitions. Lost 2-0 to Chelsea on Saturday. They're next away to Stoke in the Premier League Cup on the 8th. So not so great for the under-18s. And also some news bites action for the first team, because during the week we had a statement come out from Ji Lai Dai, or Dai Lai Ji, or whatever variation of that name you want to come up with. I know it's come up in about 3 different ways on this podcast, but that is the Chinese owner of the football club, the sister of the sibling pair, and she released a statement under her name, basically to confirm what's happening post Ron Gourlay. There wasn't too much other detail in it. Nigel Howe and Zhai are taking over as basically the people who are running the club for the moment while they take their time appointing a new CEO. So Matt, the statement came out. We've been asking for the owners to make some sort of public statement and talk to the fans, and you know, they thank the fans, etc., etc., as they usually do in these statements. Was it satisfying for you to see this come out?
It was good to have some level of communication come through from them. I think a lot of people wanted to know or try and understand the level of interest the owners have got in the club, and the fact that they're willing to make sort of statements on their behalf is only a positive thing we can take from it. But a Liverpool supporting friend of mine kind of summed it up as one of the strangest club announcements, in the fact that the owners had come out and said there is a position at the club available, we're yet to fill it, don't worry, sort of thing. So it was very much a statement of, we know Gourlay's gone, the position's likely to be filled, and then we'll go from there. So I don't know what you made of it, but it was kind of much ado about nothing for me, really.
I'm inclined to agree, and it's nice to know that Howe and Zhai are running the team. And I think in terms of how much interest they have, it kind of answers it, that basically is the sister who's the one who's interested in owning a football club and who wants to sort of get involved day to day, and then it's the brother Dai Yong who isn't so fussed, but you know, that's fine as long as one of them is, sort of thing.
As long as 50% is interested, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, as long as it's more than nothing, then it's probably more than Anton Zygavich had, so let's put it that way. A quick the most interesting line I picked up it. So for those of you who haven't read it out, it was, we are confident we can lead and implicitly trust an experienced and long-serving senior management team and their staff to operate this club to the high standards our supporters have come to expect and certainly deserve. These people know the club inside out, and with your support, we'll steer the ship in the right direction. That seems to me to sort of read like people like Nigel Howe, who have been here for ages, are the ones who are just going to kind of be able to get on with it for the next few months or what have you, until a CEO comes in and hopefully fits into that system, because it didn't seem like Ron Gourlay necessarily did fit into that system. And maybe it's going to be a case of pushing back towards how the club used to be run. But obviously, you know, it's very difficult to say that with any authority. And when it comes round to the new CEO being appointed, do you think that it's going to be a case of, we have to, you know, expect immediate change and that maybe people like Howe are going to leave? Or do you hope that when a CEO comes in, it's actually going to be a case of continuity or for back to the good old days, as it were?
I think we keep saying it, we'd like to see some level of continuity, both on the pitch and probably off the pitch as well. I think we've seen a large turnover of long-serving staff at the club. So having those guys like Howe still be around and kind of give whoever comes into that position a feel of what the club actually is and what it represents to the fans, I think it's definitely a good thing. I think we need that in place. I don't want kind of the whole backroom staff being turned over and a whole new direction being taken place. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are in terms of continuity, or whether you'd rather see a clean slate approach. But mine would be just to have some level of continuity, and kind of, I think it is important to have those long-serving members, because they are the ones that give you the identity. They pass it on to the new members of staff, and you have that real kind of, we have a Reading culture, a Reading way, to pardon the cliche.
Yeah, I think on the clean slate thing, it's difficult because Reading as a club, you can argue over the last 20 years, you don't want to wipe away that, because a clean slate is what you would take at like Sunderland or Coventry, and just, you know, there's a lot of grub on it, get it out, and then we'll start with a nice clean slate. But there's a lot of nice things on that Reading slate over the past decade or so that you want to kind of
definitely
keep a hold of. So hopefully that's the approach they're taking, and it didn't necessarily sound to be like the approach that Ron Gourlay was taking. So it is one that we'll keep an eye on the Tyler stand. And if anyone has any thoughts or opinions on the statement and how the owner's running the club, you know where to find us at Twitter and Facebook, both the Tilehurst End and the Tilehurst End at gmail.com for those thoughts and opinions, to get them in and we'll read them out on the show and discuss them. Speaking of which, it is time for the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tilehurst End
and facebook.com/the Tilehurst End.
Pretty thin mailbag this week, as it is, you know, that time of year when people's thoughts start drifting away from football, and certainly after Tuesday night, I can't blame anyone for thinking that Saturday night was a bit after the Lord's Mayor show in terms of how much disappointment can you possibly take in one match week of football. But nonetheless, we have Bilal Benassar asking us, why can't we defend? Matt, that is a pretty good question, because it seems like Paul Clement started the season with a bit of a rigid 4-4-2, a bit more rugged, proactive, sitting deep, pressuring a little bit higher up the pitch when not in possession, and having the strikers and midfielders do a little bit more. Pretty far from that now. We're in a pretty clear state of affairs, and we've conceded 32 goals so far in the league. There's only four teams who have got worse than that, whereas if you look at our goal scored ratio, we're, you know, pretty mid-table. So we're quite clearly emphasising the attack at the moment.
It's the million-dollar question. How do we keep a clean sheet? I think if I knew that the answer to that question, I'd be applying for Paul Clement's job.
I was just going to say, there's a coach's job that I'm sure is really well paid that will cover that. But I think probably the first thing I'd say is that we're continually changing the defence and the goalkeeper. Whether we are doing that because we have to or because we're just fiddling around with things, it's just not helping, is it?
It definitely isn't. Continuity. We need some semblance of a partnership at the back. The number of centre-half partnerships we've seen three goalkeepers playing as well. I don't know how many other clubs have had all three goalkeepers play, but we've seen quite a bit of action from all three of our goalkeepers. We've got the full-backs switching over constantly as well. Gunter at left-back, Yeardom at right-back, and then at the start of the second half, they switched over as well. It just kind of, there wasn't any, and then switched back again about 15 minutes later. There just isn't any sort of continuity. It feels like we're kind of, if we throw enough at a wall and hope some of it will stick, sort of approach at the moment.
And with Blackett at centre-back on the weekend as well, it did kind of feel like we're playing who's there, basically.
It
kind of links into the other question we got from Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tyler Sending, says, should Clement promote more under-23s? We saw Tom McIntyre on the bench on Saturday as pretty much the only other centre-back at the club who can turn out for us. And, I mean, the way I kind of feel about this, I'm interested to get your thoughts on it, but the way I feel like with Rinomoto and Loader in at the moment, I do kind of feel like we've satisfied that niche for now. We don't quite need, just because they've done well, doesn't mean you necessarily need to keep pouring in more young players, because you need experience in this league, and especially against teams like Leeds and teams like Stoke and Sheffield United, who have absolute bags of it. At some point, you reach a kind of saturation, I worry, with academy players.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think with Rinomoto and Loader coming in, we've probably taken the two shining stars out of the academy system at the moment, and they've adapted and settled in well to the team at the moment. We need to be patient with them, give them time. Yes, both of them have had a very good week, but the season is 46 games long. I want to be able to see them have an impact long term over the course of the season. I do think it's probably destabilising to have too many youth team players coming through, like you say. because that would be three very young players through the spine of the team. You're also looking at the others around them. Thiago Elori's, I think, 25. He's not played that much senior football for a 25-year-old. And I think that's apparent with some of the mistakes he makes as well. So having that a level of experience within the core as well, we saw the transfer approach in the summer, bringing in the likes of John O'Shea, David Myler. These are really experienced guys. Andy Yeardom from Barnsley was skipper at Barnsley as well. So there was a clear targeted approach to bring in some level of experience within the side, whether it be out on the pitch or in the dressing room as well. I thought, for me, it was interesting to see that Bakuna was given the captaincy as well ahead of Chris Gunter. I don't know what you made of that.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing to note, because Gunter was always the sort of the clear vice captain and the clear, you know, man to turn to, with Paul McShane being the club captain. So Bakuna having it, I mean, I'm not mad about it, but it's just a very interesting thing to keep an eye on, and the dynamics of that, whether Gunter would have been unhappy with it or not, I don't know. But I think from the fans' perspective, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because Gunter wasn't exactly, you know, when he was captain, it wasn't like we played a lot better, was it?
Yeah, that is true. I just thought it kind of sums up how everything is in constant rotation at the moment. I mean, Bakuna is probably a more likely starter at the moment than Gunter, so in that sense it does make sense. We also had experienced heads like McCleary on the pitch as well.
Yeah, McCleary, he's one that probably wouldn't put him in the captain bracket purely at position, really. Having the right winger as a captain doesn't always work, but he's someone, I think, having those, I mean, he's probably one of our longest serving players at the moment, but having him around the team is probably one of those good things in terms of bringing through, as we're talking about the academy players. He's one who I think certainly can talk to players like Danny Loader and Renham Hotter and be there as a kind of almost a sort of mentoring role. I like to think those sort of players, at least having them in the dressing room, does kind of fill that niche.
Yeah, definitely. I think the likes of McCleary, Gunter has been here an awful long time. They know the club inside out. Gunter as well, record caps holder for Wales. There's bags of experience. He's been to a European Championships semi-final. He got to the playoff final with us as well. So there's a lot of experience within big moments. John O'Shea surely can only be a positive within the dressing room with the amount of experience he's got. He can get hold of those younger players, drag them in, almost take kind of almost a coaching role within the team as well. We've got essentially a Champions League winner within the side. If he's not bringing something to the table in terms of being able to help develop the younger players, the likes of Loader, Rinomota, but just also put an arm around the likes of Blackett, Elori, just kind of, I want to be able to see those sorts of guys kick on, because we see the flashes of ability from Elori, the likes of Elori, up at Leeds, where he's putting a really solid performance. Then we see these momentary lapses of concentration on Saturday against Stoke, and I just find it really, really frustrating that we've got players with ability. It's just the fact that that ability is not on display consistently.
I do agree, and when it comes to O'Shea, I think he's on a one-year contract, so that is kind of on a pre-agreement for him to take a coaching role next season. So that is one that, you know, if he's not preparing for that now, then I kind of agree that needs to be something that gets sorted out ASAP. So hopefully that is exactly what is going on behind the scenes, and John O'Shea is working slowly away from being a player and more into being a coach, which is certainly...
Or John O'Shea, the Reading manager.
Yeah. In
who knows?
Manager. It's been a long time since we've had a player manager, and if we get into that sort of state...
That'd be a real 90s throwback.
That will be an absolute throwback, having John O'Shea lead from the dugout and then throw 3 minutes to go to protect a 1-0 lead. It will be a real sort of...
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, the fans of mid-90s Reading will be revelling in their experiences from back then. So yeah, we'll hopefully leave that thought to the annals of history and move on then for the last part of the show and any other business. We'll be talking about the Sheffield United game.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
Sheffield United, a bit of an interesting proposition, as they were last season when they beat us twice, you might remember. The 1-0 defeat to Leeds on Saturday came via a goalkeeping calamity, and it means they've only won 1 in 5. They've got a good away record nonetheless, 5 wins from 10. Can be a bit leaky on the road. Rotherham, Brentford and Millwall all scored 2 against them. Middlesbrough got 3 past them. And yet, you look at the history of Reading playing Sheffield United. Can you tell me the last time, Matt, that Reading beat Sheffield United at home in a league game?
I've absolutely no idea.
It was way back in almost 12 years ago now, in Reading 3, Sheffield United 1 in the Premier League.
No.
Oh yeah, for real, yeah. We've managed to lose against them home in 2009, twice. Then we 2011, they came back from 2-0 down despite us being in the playoffs and then being pretty much done for the season in April 2011. And then last season they came and won 3-1. So we have a pretty torrid record when it comes to playing Sheffield United.
We might as well not turn up on Saturday then.
In the last decade or so. In fact,
you're giving it away, Mark.
The last man to score a winning goal at home, because we did beat them away in 2008, but the last man to score a winning goal against Sheffield United at home in the league was Ulysses De La Cruz, with what I can remember to be an absolutely stunning run and finish, which made it 2-0 to Reading in a 3-1 victory. So I'm counting that as the winner, basically. And, I mean, yeah, so where is the optimism coming from this one? Do you feel like we can forget history and move it to one side, or is Sheffield United the favourites, and rightly so?
I think history aside, Sheffield United have got to go down as favourites heading into the game. They're in the playoff spots at the moment. Their away record, like you say, is fairly decent, especially against the sides in the bottom half. I think they bagged 3 against Brentford, 2 against Rotherham, 3 against Millwall, and 3 against Bolton. So there's definitely goals in that team. And the way we've been conceding at home, I think we've conceded 2 in the last 3 home games. So heading into it, that doesn't bode particularly well.
Yeah, I think that the problem is with us, really, is are we going to keep doing the absolute minimum that we need to do to keep Paul Clement in his job? And what do you think that Paul Clement can get away with this weekend? Is it going to be a victory or nothing? Is he going to be able to scrub a draw and stay in the job? I mean, as far as we know, he's staying in the job. Or is a defeat actually going to be the sort of thing that spells the end?
I think he'll be safe if he were to lose on Saturday. I don't think there's enough pressure on this game. I don't think it's one we're expected to win necessarily. I know that's bit deflating to hear going into a home game on a Saturday, that I don't think my team's going to be picking up 3 points, but I would probably take a point from this game. I think it's the games closer to Christmas that are going to define whether Paul Clement is in the job come the new year. We've got Rotherham away, Millwall away and QPR away as well, so those are the really big games that I think are going to define whether he's still in the job. And then sandwiched in between that is Borough at home as well. And as we know, they don't concede many goals at all. So they're going to be very tricky opposition to break down. So the month of December could be looking fairly bleak in terms of points.
No, I think you're pretty right in that regard. And that's where Paul Clement is going to have to pull something out of the bag in this game, because it's certainly one of the easier home games we've got coming up in the next few weeks. As you mentioned, where are your prediction cards laying down for this game then? Are we going to be able to impress in front of the Sky cameras? Because I don't think we've done any kind of impressing in front of the Sky cameras so far this season.
I'm going to go and be optimistic. Another 2-2 draw at home.
Another 2-2 draw at home. That is, I mean, at least it's entertaining in a large sense. So long as
I said that to the guy sitting next to me. At least it's better than last year, because it's slightly more entertaining. We're still not fantastic, but at least it's slightly more entertaining when you turn up on a Saturday.
But there is goals. You cannot deny that there were goals being scored at the Vedeski Stadium at the moment. And Yeah, in terms of my prediction, I think I'm going to err on the side of caution and go 2-1 Sheffield United. I think that they are the type of team that can bounce back from a sort of demoralising defeat against Leeds pretty well and turn it on in front of the Sky cameras. To round up the show then, prediction league terms, we all got a single point against Leeds because we all said Leeds would win, just none of us 1-0. Wim, however, has denied the 2-1 Stoke prediction that he had for the weekend, so he's on 20 points. Tom Crocker is up to 6, he's still bottom, but he did say we draw with Stoke, as did Ollie Allen there. He's now taking his place third outright on 14 points. So Wim still in front in terms of the prediction league. And I put in a 2-1 defeat for Sheffield United. I'll get the rest of the guys' scores for the weekend then. And that is where our emphasis will be on thetalehurstend.com in the coming days. A free week, which is quite nice. We also have the FA Cup third round draw on Monday, which is something to look out for. We'll obviously keep you up to date on that. And as I say, this show will be back around about the 20th of December as we take a bit of a mid-season break to sort out some other stuff in our lives before we get back into podcasting duties. Speaking of which, it's a pleasure as always having you on this week, Matt. And you're available at Panners and Nutmegs on the old Twitter, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
So we'll be back in due course then. Enjoy the beginning of the festive period. Don't eat too many mince pies and don't spend it all on shopping, because we all know those half-season tickets are going to be the only way that we can guarantee watching every game as Paul Clements Reading burst back into the promotion race. Come on, you ass.
Just us.